Hi, my name's Lisa Azile, and I'm here today with Dr. Amy Johnson. Amy is the author of three books, including her latest, The Little Book of Big Change, The No Willpower Approach to Breaking Any Habit. And if you haven't met Amy before, Amy is a life coach, she's a psychologist, she's the mother of two. Like I said, she's the author of three wonderful books, and she's also the writer of one of my favorite email newsletters, and which is free, and you can sign up for it on her website. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Amy today is because I really love this book. I love this book. I think it's a game changer. I think it's really unique in the world of how to get over habits that are causing us distress. And it made an impact on my life. And I don't know about you, but there are only a handful of books that after reading, you know, the insight kind of just gently seeps into you and makes a difference in your life. And this, for me, was one of them. And I suspect for many people, it will have that effect. And I love it. And Amy, thank you for taking time out to talk to me today and talk to us
today.
Thank
you. Yeah, thank you. It's always fun to have these kind of conversations.
Yeah, it is. It's been amazing, really, videoing and Skyping and...
Yeah.
So I guess I've got a list of questions, unless you have anything you want to start out with. Should we just sort of wander through them?
Sure. Just let me know what you thought and what you saw, and we'll take it from there.
Cool. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you first is how, if you could just give us an overview of how you became interested in habits and your personal experience with them and what you'd sort of tried before and what maybe did and didn't work and how, you know, in a general specific way, how you kind of came to see this new way. I thought maybe we could, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of habits in my life. I include anxiety and worry, you know, as habits. I talk about those in the book, and those were my earliest habits, and those were around, you know, for most of my life in the early years, and probably as ways to try to cope with those habits, I kind of took on other habits. I was a heavy smoker for a period of time and just all kinds of things. More recently, although it's been a little while now, I had an eating disorder, a binge eating habit that I write a lot about in the book. And so, you know, like a lot of us, I was very familiar with habits, and I was always doing anything I could to try to break them, you know, also being kind of a person that would consume any kind of self-help or self-development and never shy away from going to work and trying to fix myself and be better, you know. I definitely dove into that and did, you know, pretty much any kind of therapy you can imagine, all kinds of, like, more, I don't know what you call it, like, energy practices, you know, everything from acupuncture to more out there kind of woo-woo energy things that people try, to just willpower, discipline, like, you know, like the things you wear on your wrist where you snap your wrist to remind yourself. I mean, post-it notes. I mean, everything you can think of, you know, anything that anyone's ever tried, I tried it. And you know, was the case for me, and like I see for a lot of people, sometimes those things work for a short period of time. It's pretty rare that they work on a deep level permanently. I just don't, and I'm sure there are exceptions. So hopefully if someone's listening and they say, no, I did that wrist thing, I'm done. That's awesome. It's good for you. And, you know, there's nothing wrong. I don't care how people get over their habits. I just want people to get over their habits. So that's awesome if that worked for you. It's just that, you know, falls short. Even therapy, especially for things like eating disorders. I mean, it's like 50% at best are the rates that people are giving. And that's just really sad. It's just not good enough, you know? So those things tend to be the short term. They make you feel all pumped up and empowered and, oh, I got this. It's going to be different now. And then you have a huge crash afterward because it doesn't work forever. And for me and for a lot of people, I think when you have that big, oh, yay, this is going to work. This is finally it. And then you have that crash. It takes you deeper than you ever were. And you start to feel more and more hopeless. Yeah. Like so many times when I talk with people, they're so nervous when we first start talking because they say, this is the last thing I can think of to try. And if this doesn't work, oh my God, I've tried everything and nothing works. Like, they've already decided, if this doesn't work, I'm officially hopeless. And I know that feeling, you know, I think a lot of us do. And it's sad. So anyway, trying all those behavioral things and all that stuff, you know, it tends to be like this roller coaster. We try really hard and then we get this big crash, and or maybe we're good for a while and then it's worse than ever. And I just knew, like I know everyone knows, there has to be a better way. And there is a better way. So we'll talk about that better way a lot, but just kind of in a nutshell, you know, sort of what I saw is it's not chasing that surface level technique or behavior or the new mindset or the new thing we can employ. You know, that's going to give you a short-term boost. What tends to really shift things for people is really like having a sea change, like truly seeing yourself, your life, your habit, how your mind works in a different way. And that sounds big, and it is big because it's shifting the foundation of how we see everything. It truly is big. At the same time, and you know, because you've experienced this in your own life too, like it's big and little, you know, it's huge, it's foundational, but at the same, you're still you, you know, it's not, and it doesn't have to take years, and it's not this big, hard process. So in those ways, it's like, oh my gosh, this is kind of the easiest thing I ever did. And it's also the biggest thing I ever did, you know? So my most recent habit, my binge eating habit, I don't even know what you'd want to call it, went away, cleared up, you know, whatever it was. It felt like I just kind of left it behind relatively quickly. Once I saw a few things about, oh my gosh, this is how my mind really works. This is why I'm doing this. Not because I have this disorder or I'm flawed or whatever, all the reasons, you know, people suggested. It's like once I saw just how my mind works, then it was kind of easy to walk away from.
Yeah. Because that was one of, because we feel like we are completely dysfunctional and weak and, yeah, failing, aren't we? Because we can't make a change, and we totally know what we'd like to be doing, and we don't want to be doing this. So I had a little insight with your book and mine. I struggle with caffeine, and it really just doesn't work for me. In the short term, I love it. I love the taste, and I love that little high. But in the long term, I've discovered that it makes me depressed. Like it's just doesn't work. So as I was reading your book, I was thinking about this. And one of the things, which ties into, I think, what you were saying, is that you suggested that this is not, our habits are not a sign that we're, you know, diseased and unhealthy, and in actual fact that they're a sign of sort of strength and resilience and the body, and or us, not the body, but us just trying to get back to home base, and it misguided, and so I hadn't really, I mean, it seems obvious now, you know, like these insights, once you know them, it's like, yeah, I kind of knew that, but I didn't. And once you said that, I thought, it's a really nice, for me, it was a lovely place for the book to start with. So I could leave behind my, I'm failing and, you know, weak and yeah, just, and start from this nice place. I don't know if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, sorry. Oh. Can we edit this part out? I'm sorry, I didn't know if you were going to do it.
No, it's nice to see him. What a cutie.
Oh my gosh, sorry if you weren't going to edit.
Really fun.
Yeah, so it's such a flip, you know, to see, like you said, that our habits are actually a sign of our health. Because first of all, just seeing that, just considering that, like, wait a minute, okay, so this, you know, usually in your everyday life, it's like, I do these things and I know better, what the heck's wrong with me? And this, you know, do I hate myself? Am I self-sabotaging? Am I just too far gone? These are the questions people really have, you know? And so to think, no, it's a healthy brain. It's a sign of a healthy brain wanting to get back to a good place. So something, you know, relatively innocent like caffeine, it's like, it does feel good. You take it, you're like, wow, you drink it, whatever, you know, it's like, okay, well, I feel good right now. And sure, it's an artificial good feeling, but there's so much in us that just wants to feel good, because feeling good is what we are. It's our natural state, you know, and we know that somewhere deep in there, we know we are meant to feel comfortable and happy. And that is us, you know? So I love seeing it like that. And I heard once. I don't know exactly how it was said, but just basically that I think I wrote it in the book that, like, our habits are misguided attempts at self-love.
Yep.
It's not that you hate yourself. It's not that you don't know better. It's that you love yourself and you want to feel good. You're just going about it. You're just following your brain and going about it in a way that's not ultimately helpful.
Yeah. So, well, maybe this is a good time to talk about that sort of brain aspect, the lower brain and the, you know, the lizard brain, which I really liked, and I loved your put some great metaphors, and also the one that you used in the book that was helpful for you with the lizard with the megaphone and no arms and legs. It's pretty cool. But yeah, if you could talk about that, just that basic idea of you know, the lower brain and the big us.
Yeah. So our habits are all thought, like, and by thought, I mean, like, I don't mean thought like a sentence in your head, you know, like words necessarily, but it's experience coming through us, and it's coming from our brain, and it's largely coming from our lower brain, which we call the lizard brain or the inner lizard or whatever. And it's basically just, you know, that part of your brain that isn't very wise. It's in reptiles. That's why they call it the inner lizard. It's very kind of rudimentary part of your brain, and it just picks up on habits and patterns, and it's very easily conditioned, and it has our best interest at heart. It's not a bad thing. You know, again, it's wanting to help you feel better, and it's being very efficient and just kind of doing what's reinforced and doing what it can to give you some relief in the moment. And so it's all, I just love thinking of the whole thing. It's like such a good thing. We complain about it. We don't like it. We want to change it. But ultimately, there's nothing like out to get us, our own brain or anything else. You know, we're not out to get ourselves. It all has a good purpose. So the lower brain is that part that will just notice these little things like, ooh, I drink caffeine. I get some happy chemicals. Okay, more caffeine.
Yeah.
End of story. That's so simple, right? Of course. Of course, your lower brain is going to start saying, ooh, give her more caffeine. She likes that. And we want to feel good, so it gets started. And so the lower brain, eventually, if it starts screaming at you for caffeine all day long, even though you sort of know better and you know that's not good for you, your lower brain is just a poor little lizard. It's still doing what it thinks it, you know, is going to help you and make you happy. And so that's how all of our habits are. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, heroin, shopping, overworking, vegging out on Facebook for hours, whatever it is, there's something in there that just allows us to kind of let go and be out of our heads a little bit. That's like that, you know, when people do their habit, there's almost just like a release of tension, and it feels kind of good. And sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it's huge, but your lower brain picks up on that and says more of that feels good.
Yeah.
So what we, as wise human beings that have a whole brain, you know, want to do is understand that. Because when we can understand that, you get to a point where your lower brain is telling you, drink more caffeine, drink more, that'll solve all your problems, you know, but you're on to it. Like, you're wise and you know better. And yeah, it would be a short-term solution, just like all the other short-term solutions we talked about. But the thing is, it's our nature to feel good, and we have this self-correcting mechanism in our minds, and we're going to go back to feeling good. So we get caught up in the quick fixes. Oh, do this, do that. And our lower brain is right on board with that. Yeah, this works. Do this, do that. But when we can see it in a way where we're a little detached from it and we just kind of have more insight on it, we, like the wise adult us, you know, the whole us, can look at that and say, no, that's just my lower brain, you know, doing that, giving me these urges, but I'm going to be okay. And then you wait it out. And there's some discomfort a lot of times if you have a true habit, but just like every human experience, that discomfort goes away and you get back to home base. And you do that for a little bit and the habit's gone. So, I mean, it's so simple in that way, you know, it's like, if you want to kick a caffeine habit, duh, quit drinking caffeine. But that's a whole heck of a lot easier when you can kind of understand how this works. You know, when people come to see, oh, I see, I don't even want the caffeine. This is just my lower brain throwing a fit about it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to let it throw its fit, do what I'm going to do, and then, you know, and then kind of carry on from there.
Because it's very, and the urgency, which you talk about in a really useful way, I think, that urgency, you know, that you described the lower brain being to do with survival. So it's very urgent. It does actually sort of feel like your survival, and that the only way I need to have a cup of tea is going to go away is if I have the cup of tea. It kind of, you know, it feels like that without that insight and that the strength of the lizard brain or the lower brain, it's strong. It can get pretty strong.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, it totally can. And it totally feels like us that wants it. Like, oh, I want this tea.
Yeah.
And we think about, and we're flooded with all the reasons why it's so wonderful and it's not that bad and I'll quit tomorrow. And, you know, because that's just the way our brain is a really amazing machine. Like, it puts on a good show. If your lower brain was like, Lisa, have a cup of tea, like a robot voice, he'd be like, oh, whatever. You could dismiss it in a second. And we could all just have no habits. But it doesn't do that. It enlists you. You know, it looks like it's your wish. And it's all emotional and physical. And, yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, very good show. So the other thing I liked, you've got a chapter called Urges Are Your Inner Alarm Clock, which I really liked as well. So that, maybe I'll just let you talk about that idea.
Yeah, so like we've been talking about, the way that the lower brain gets kind of just reinforced. So every time you have those thoughts about the feelings of, you know, wanting caffeine and you go have it, it kind of reinforces that. And over time, we've innocently kind of strengthened our own habits, not on purpose, but by giving into urges, just neurologically, that's what we do, right? We just kind of strengthen it. And it's very similar. Like, this was huge for me to just see it this way. Like, it's very similar to just like setting an alarm clock, because our brain is a machine. I mean, it's an awesome machine. It puts on a good show, but it's a machine, you know, and it operates by the principles that you would know a machine would operate by, you know? And so you reinforce something, or you sort of tell it to do something, or you pay a lot of attention to something that it does, it's just going to do it more. That's just the way the machine works. It has nothing to do with any of us. And I love that it's not personal, because, and seeing, you know, that's big for people, seeing that it's not personal. I think especially with some habits, ones like mine, I had so much shame around my binge eating habit. I mean, it's a disgusting habit. I thought it meant so many things about me as a person and who does this, and, you know, and so many people have habits like that are really kind of shameful. They're embarrassed about them. And it's not about us. For whatever reason, you know, I turn to binging, someone else turns to something else, but it's a machine just doing what we innocently taught it to do. So to see that it's not personal, and to see that it's so predictable, that our lower brain is if we keep, you know, engaging in those urges and giving it caffeine or giving it food or whatever it's asking for, we're just setting an alarm clock. And of course it's going to go off. But, you know, it's like, if our alarm clock in our bedroom isn't personal, we don't get up and scream at it. It's like, well, I set you. That's why you're going off. Okay, enough now. That's how we can kind of be with our own urges, you know, our own lower brain. It's like, I did this innocently, just trying to feel good, like all people want to feel good. But I see you. I see you in a new way, and I'm not going to give in to you.
Yeah. Yeah, because we could get really, I know that, you know, not, you know, sometimes I get the odd thought, and it's like, wow, that's a wacky, awful thought. And if I mean, I could go to town on analyzing that, or, you know, once you know this understanding, it's like, well, just, you know, that's just, I don't know, I didn't make that. It's just a thought. But it's a wonderful understanding, I think, to not be responsible for these thoughts, not just in the habit way as well, as I know you teach, but just in general life, isn't it, that these, I mean, yeah, this crazy mind sometimes, it's not always crazy, but sometimes.
Yeah, you know. I mean, that alone, that is huge. Like, I remember not long ago talking with someone, and I don't know what possessed me to tell her this. She was talking about some thoughts she was having that were pretty out there, that she was taking very personally. And for whatever reason, she had a lot of anxiety around one of her children, too, who was kind of young at the time. And it just felt like maybe she'd understand. I don't know what the reasoning was, but it just occurred to me, tell her about your crazy thought, which my crazy thought was when my son was born, we had a house that had an upstairs. And every time I would carry him, like when he was tiny, down the stairs, I would just imagine dropping him. And it's horrible. Like, I don't even like to think it right now. It's horrible. But somehow I knew enough to think, oh, okay. And I could just do that, shake my head like, oh, don't go there. But I could see how probably years ago without an understanding, or, you know, people who don't have an understanding, it's like, oh my gosh, what am I not fit to be a mother? What kind of monster am I? What's wrong with me? You know, I mean, that happens. And then the reason I said it about the woman I was talking with is because she's like, oh my gosh, I had that same thought. Like, she had that same thought, which kind of added a whole nother level of big deal to it, because if two people are having the same thought, I mean, how many other probably millions of people have similar or that same thought, you know? And like, how personal can it be?
Yeah. No, that's a great shake it off. And like,
Yeah.
And the other thing you talk about is that to see the urges as a way that they're a sign that we're getting caught up in our thinking, and that maybe and that stepping back is a useful thing. And was it in your book? This is another thing that's really stuck with me. You share that most animals, maybe all animals, when they're getting busy or uptight and worried or whatever, they slow down, and that as humans we tend to keep going and move faster, and that the idea that we can use our urges as a way of just saying that we're getting caught up in the kind of thought, and we're kind of in a busy place, and we're maybe a little less connected to that sort of solid calm bit of ourself, and that the running is maybe not as useful as the just, oh, this is a sign to just kind of just pull back a little bit and see what happens.
Yeah, I love that. It's about the animals, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, if we just go on instinct, wisdom, whatever it is, common sense, the stuff that we all have access to that's there underneath our very like smart brains, you know, if we just go on that deeper thing, which is what the animals are going on. I mean, of course, if you're lost, you don't run faster, you stop and you regain your bearings. Like, they instinctively know that they're going to get some clarity. It's going to come back if they kind of lay low and let it. And I mean, that was really cool for me to learn too. And it's like, yeah, like, you know, I always use a lot of weather metaphors, but it's kind of like when it's pouring down rain, like, and like, you know, the garbage cans are blowing across the street, that's not when you go for a walk. That's when you wait. Maybe when it lessens to like a drizzle, maybe then you go out, or you wait till it stops altogether. But it's just like that within us. When we're just crazy and we're wanting things that we know that we don't really want and all of that, it sounds too simple to be true, doesn't it? But it's like, just lay low and know, because I don't think we're really told this, that our mind kind of clears on its own. You know, there is a self-correcting mechanism in there that we always kind of come back to homeostasis, and we can trust that. But we get caught up in our heads, and we want to get to homeostasis right this second.
Yeah.
So we're going to hurry up and go eat something or buy something or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Another metaphor that you used, which I really liked, was the backseat driver. Just as a way, another way of saying this sort of this loud voice, which seems overwhelming, and the idea, if you could maybe explain, you know, share what you write about with the backseat driver.
Yeah, it's similar to, you know, kind of like I was saying about that lower brain or that inner lizard. You know, it's yelling at you, it's doing whatever it's doing, whatever it's been kind of innocently taught to do. And just coming to that realization that our brain is a machine and it's just going to do what it does. It's a healthy machine. It's all in your favor. It's all trying to help you feel better. It just doesn't really, you know, it doesn't have the best tactic, but it is trying to help you feel better. And almost, I don't know, you know, I think it's personal how people like come to see this, but almost just knowing that there's a you in there that's very different from the brain. Brain is just an organ in your body, just like your stomach. We don't confuse ourselves with our stomach, but we do with our brain for some reason, you know. But knowing, like, our brain's just doing what it's doing, but I'm in there, and I don't have to do everything it says. And so the backseat driver image is kind of one of, you know, we're the ones, ultimately, we, with our higher brain and all of our control, we're driving the car. And our lower brain is kind of like the person in the back seat that can scream all they want. And, you know, in the book, I think I say, like, it's a, you know, like, run the light, run the red light. You can scream through the red light. But you're the one with your foot on the brake. You're the one behind the wheel. All it can do is scream. And, you know, I mean, we're human, like, and especially when we don't understand how this all works, of course we're gonna run the light. Mm-hmm. Of course we are. Like, and I just, that's such a message I'm so passionate about people seeing. Like, your habit is not your fault. That doesn't mean don't take responsibility for it, but we get caught up in this. It's so innocent and so understandable. If someone's screaming at you in the back seat to run the light or to do whatever it's screaming at you to do, and you don't know better, and you kind of think that's you, and it's creating all this tension, of course you're going to do it. Of course you are. But when you see, oh, he's in a seatbelt and he can't even reach me. He can't make me do anything. All he can do is scream at me. Then suddenly you're like, oh, I can make the choice here. You might still be annoyed. You might be, you know, frustrated with the screaming, but he's going to lose his voice at some point. He can't scream forever and you're in charge.
I think that's wonderful. That was a little, I'd never heard that idea before. I thought that was a really wonderful one to keep in mind. I want to talk a little bit about setbacks, but just before I go there, because what we're talking about, and the beauty of reading the book, you know, we're having a conversation here, you know, relatively short conversation about this, but there's a gentleness in the book, and I know that is so powerful. And I think this is how the best way to learn anything. And if there's no gentleness in it, then, you know, the gentleness is the wisdom. And so I was just thinking, if people were listening to us talk, would they? I'm just wondering if it would sound like there's things to do, or like, what, how do people respond to this? I imagine, because our natural response is, but how do I do this? And so one of the wonderful things about the book is just by reading, you know, there's a, it's a short book, but you know, I don't know how long it might take, 6 hours or so. And you kind of just absorbed in these sort of gentle ideas and they kind of just sort of become part of you. And you sort of gradually see that it really is, as you've said, about less what you do and just coming to this sort of new understanding. And you talk about the power of the pause, that it's not like a lightning bolt necessarily, is that this understanding. It's often a sort of a gentle shift, and you start to notice a pause when you get those loud thoughts. Whereas, you know, before there was no pause, there's just the loud thoughts and I have to do this, there's no other option. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's such a, it's probably like the most important thing in all of this, you know, and it's a hard thing to talk about in words sometimes because we're describing kind of a feeling. Yeah. It's like trying to describe to someone how to get balance riding a bike. You can't, you know it when you feel it. You know what it is, you know, you just feel it in your body that you're in that place where you're in balance. But until you experience it, it's a really tough thing. But it I think it truly is kind of like riding a bike or something like that, reading this book and you know, just taking in not just this book, but just this kind of understanding and this any kind of understanding where we just come to see things in a different way because we're so usually so led by our mind that wants to give a plan. You know, what are the steps? What do I do? What's the plan? And it's totally okay and understandable that we ask those questions. But again, being caught up in those questions is kind of like another red flag. It's another sign that we're trying to think our way out of this problem. And that's what I did with all my habits for years. And that's what most people do. We try to think our way out and it doesn't do us very well. You know, it just doesn't serve us very well. But the truth is, you know, when all that thinking just kind of quiets down, we're habit free by nature. We weren't born doing bad habits. You know, most of us did not have most of these bad habits when we were children. Children do pick up little nervous habits, but they outgrow them in a flash. And it's really cool to see that too. They do. They don't have to go to all these 12-step programs and things. They bite their nails. They have twitches. They do, you know, but they're just, if the parents don't make a big deal out of them, they just kind of fall away. And so I think that's just human. But so for us, when we're just kind of in a quieter mindset, our lower brain isn't screaming at us. And not only that, but we see things in a different level. It's like we're just kind of, you know, it's not as crazy as it sounds, but we're kind of just at a different level of consciousness. We're just, you know, we're in a good place and we just see life differently. Mm-hmm. We feel more hopeful. We see possibilities. It's, you know, everyone's experienced that. And so when I wrote the book, and I just in general, I think the most valuable thing that can come to anyone is just a deeper sense of relaxation. And that doesn't seem like enough to our mind. Our mind is like, tell me more. Explain the brain science another time. You know, tell me what to do. That's what minds want. And so we feed the mind a little bit. But ultimately, like you said, it's about just letting this kind of seep in and knowing that when we're in a nice place, we just kind of get it. It clicks in a way that it's not going to click when you're trying to think about it intellectually as much.
Yeah. And I'm just going to repeat what you said. Yes, I totally agree.
And too, I think there's something about like the day-to-day of rising above a habit, where our mind wants to be in charge of this. It wants to figure it all out. You know, like just this morning I talked with someone and she just said something really amazing. She's like, you know, I'm not going to say that, oh, I'm not going to binge today. I'm not going to binge eat today. I'm not, because typically that's how she would kind of start her day. Mm-hmm. And it's just like more thought. It's that pep talk, you know, that's where willpower and all that motivation comes from. She's like, I don't know what I'm going to do today, but my intention is to just be slow and to be quiet and with myself and to take it moment by moment by moment. And again, your mind might throw a fit like, no, I need to break this month, you know, but that is how any change happens. We do the best we can from a quiet place in that moment. And from there, it just kind of grows exponentially in ways that our mind can't really, you know, get a handle on.
Yeah. And I like the way in the book you just talk about willpower and describe why willpower doesn't work. And it's that idea of piling more thought onto thought's the problem, and then we pile more thought on, and then we strengthen it, and now we've got this. When you describe it like that, it's makes total sense that our best intention, and it really makes sense. It does make sense. Willpower makes, you know, on the surface makes total sense to kind of try and fight our way out, and then we look at other people, you know. My husband, he has no problem stopping caffeine. Like, he's amazing. You know, if someone says don't drink, he drinks every day, a cup, large cup every morning. And if someone says don't drink it, he just stops. You know, so, you know, we look at other people, or we, and it makes sense to try and willpower our way out of it. But it really isn't that helpful, and kind of just compounds things.
Yeah, it's kind of like ultimately the habit we all have is living in our heads and believing all of that thinking.
Yeah.
You know, because like yeah, we want to work it out from that level. We want to like make ourselves stop. We want to figure out the plan. We want to do the steps, and that's reinforced everywhere we look, yeah. You know? So it's a tough one to break. Like that is probably the ultimate habit. When we can be in a place where there's all kinds of thoughts and suggestions and urges popping in, but it's almost like Teflon, like they just kind of bounce off our minds a little bit more, and maybe not even that extreme, but you just know a little bit of something, you know, people that read your newsletter, people that read mine, like there's at least that sense in the back of their mind, like, okay, I at least know intellectually, I don't need to take all this so seriously. Like this isn't all truth. It gives you that little bit of space from it, you know, and when we're less addicted to our own thoughts and believing them, then things just work out. Like, you know, then you do like that, like my client said, you do just show up in the moment and do the best you can. And your best is good enough.
Yes. And which brings us to setbacks, like, because they can, you know, they can start a whole nother pile of thought about, how we've blown it all and we're back to square one. And yeah. I love the way you talk about that. I'd love if you, could you touch on that for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably like the most important chapter in the book, because so often, you know, so first of all, just look at how anything happens. It's not this nice straight linear path. I mean, every once in a while it happens that someone has some huge insight that completely changes their life and they never, ever once go back to their old way. But that is so rare. And it makes sense that it wouldn't happen that way if you just think of how our brain works, you know? I mean, we've been doing these habits for a long time, most of us, or at least even if it's been a kind of a shorter time, we don't like it and there's a lot of attention on it. So it gets very sticky when you think about just kind of neurologically. So even as you start to see something and maybe you do your habit less, and people do this all the time, they kind of see something. It's like, oh my gosh, well, I don't need to do that. And there's like a really quick instant kind of change that tends to happen. Well, at some point your brain's going to get kind of antsy, your lower brain, and be like, hey, remember me? I used to run your life. What about me? And it's going to start screaming from the back seat again. And that's so normal. Like that could not, you know, I mean, that's the most predictable, normal, healthy thing that you can imagine. The only problem is when we forget who's driving and who's in the back seat, you know? So even if it starts yelling from the back seat and you fall into it, big deal, big deal. So you go back for a couple weeks, you have a bad week, a bad day, whatever it is. You still know what you know, and you can still just pick up, you know, right where you started, except people get kind of confused, they get freaked out, and they go back to the old way of thinking of, oh no, this must mean, and I'm off the wagon, and I have to start from day one, and, you know, all that whole school of thinking that kind of throws them off. So if we can just let ourselves have setbacks and know that it's not that big a deal, it really wouldn't be a big deal whatsoever. It doesn't matter, yeah. You know, but we have to know that. We have to kind of have that understanding.
Yeah. And I guess noticing those disappointment, you know, thoughts as just, you know, another pile of thoughts that our mind is generating and yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, is there anything else? Are there any like super, super common questions that people that I've missed or... that people ask you?
One thing, I mean, there's some questions, like, but I guess one thing I was just thinking, especially with regard to your upcoming book and like the kind of stuff that you write about too, is something that's really interesting. It's been coming to my attention more lately is how sometimes it's better for us, or I don't know how to say it, but people get better results in terms of breaking habits when they just look toward this understanding that I share in the book of how our mind works and why we have habits, and just almost look at it from, like, without trying to fix their habit. Mm. Just look at it more generally. Look at it with curiosity. You know, just for me, it's always like, okay, what do all 7 billion people on Earth have in common? That's what I think is fascinating. Like, how are we all the same? What are the basic principles by which we all operate? And there are some. And when we see them, it's like, oh, okay, well, I get this now at a bigger level. And when we kind of get that sort of understanding, the little specifics, they just work themselves out. So you have a habit. Well, you just don't see, you don't think in the same way. You're not as attached to your thoughts. So that habit just falls away. And it really does happen that way. So sometimes it can be really good to just be curious about the human operating system more generally and how thought works and all of that kind of stuff, and not read the book or not think too much about this is my habit that I need to break for a couple reasons. I mean, one, we have so much thinking and like shame and all kinds of stuff built into our thinking about our habit that we aren't really seeing that clearly. You know, I mean, it's like seeing through a lot of filters and trying to sort things out through that. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I mean, it does, but there's just so much in our head about that already, you know? And two, I think, you know, when people, it's just, again, natural, what we do is we go to chat rooms for people who are addicted to caffeine or whatever your thing is, or, you know, you go to this group or you go here, and it's like there's so much focus on it, so much looking at it. And what we're doing is we're looking at the outward manifestation. So we're looking at the tip of the iceberg. The one little thing people can see is that there's this behavior that I do all the time. Or even if it's like anxiety is your habit, there's this feeling that I feel all the time. Well, that's the tip of the iceberg. What we want to understand, we don't want to just stare at the tip of the iceberg and expect the whole thing to shift. You want to go deep and see, what is this made of? Like, where is it coming from? So if we can kind of set aside what you do and how bad it is and how horrible it is and all that, and just get curious about, wow, what's it like to be human? Like, how do I get urges? What are these? Where are they coming from? You know, all of that kind of stuff. That tends to really shift things for people. And I kind of learned that sort of the hard way, because I taught a class called Break Your Habit over the fall. And people definitely saw some huge things and had some big shifts. But I just saw that in the classes and the calls, when we were just talking more generally, they were seeing a lot more than if we get into the specifics. And listening to other people, so if somebody had a shopping habit and they're listening to somebody talking about their overworking habit, they would get more insight out of that person being coached or whatever than they would themselves. And I just think that's awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah, that's a lovely thing to point out. And I mean, I think you've really done a good job with this book and doing that. This feels quite relaxing to read. You tell me to relax and not try too hard, and it's I read it again recently for this interview, and it's got better, and I found some new things. And but yeah, it's gentle, and thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So I think people, if anyone's watching this and anything sort of is resonating even a little bit, I really think you might find reading this book, helpful and comforting.
Thank you. I'm so glad. I love hearing that it just helps people like feel nice as they're reading it. Because honestly, that's not just about a nice feeling in the moment, like we said. You know, I mean, when we feel good, we see things that we wouldn't otherwise see. If we can just kind of relax our thinking, let all that kind of just, all that, how do I fix this, fall away. I mean, we're in good shape. So that's awesome. It's awesome that it does that.
Yeah, well, it's just a sign of wisdom, you know, because wisdom, and of course, as you talk about, I know that that bit of us that is, you know, beneath our thoughts and is calm. It's just when I read something that's reassuring and is reminding me that I'm, you know, for starters, that I'm okay. It makes me feel good, and like you say, the insights, they just kind of seep in. When I came back to, so when I read this about you, I read your copy you sent me 6 months ago, and at the time I remembered really clearly what I'd learned, and then when I was thinking about this interview, I was almost like, what can I learn? You know, like that, the bit that I've learned is now so much a part of me. I'm like, I can't really remember. But I remember having this really, initially it was like, I learned some stuff. But and I love that. It just becomes part of us. And it's, you know, we just go on and almost forget who we learned it from. And
yeah. That's great.
Well, thank you so much. Great. Thank you. Well, I look forward to sharing this.
Thank you. Thank you so much.